Hello, and welcome to another episode of Blonde Leading the Blonde with Kelsey and Veronica. Veronica, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. You fed me really well today.
We did eat a lot today. Then we went for a long walk. It was lovely.
Yeah, hopefully we balanced it out with physical activity.
We tried. I think an attempt was made. We walked a pretty long ways.
Yeah.
I would say at least a mile.
Yeah, I wonder how many steps that was. The snack that I brought to you today, I think I've been looking at the coffee cinnamon muffins from Trader Joe's, and they lived up to my expectations.
They were really good.
They were really good.
And gluten-free.
Yeah.
Very delicious.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't even planned. I keep forgetting you trying to not eat gluten.
Trying. Succeeding like 90% of the time, so I feel like that's a win, but could definitely be better about it. I'll be on a good kick and then I'll go out. It's easy to eat gluten-free at home, but then when I go out, it's a lot harder because I'll be, you know, at a restaurant and want to get something healthy, but between like pasta or pizza and a salad, it's when you're out, it's kind of hard to always go with a gluten-free option if there's not a good gluten-free option. So we're trying out here, but perfection has not been reached and probably never will.
It's all about the balance. So we are recording from our new headquarters, and it's the new apartment that Kelsey and Luke and Ghost and all the other cats that I'm tired of even naming moved
in. But we only have one cat, if anyone asks.
Oh, yeah. If Kelsey's building that which we're not name, asks, that Kelsey and Luke have one cat only.
Yeah.
Also, Kelsey is about to start a new job.
I am. Yeah. On Monday, I did not give myself, well, I kind of gave myself a break, but I didn't give myself an official break because my last job was yesterday. Today is Saturday. And on Monday, starting a new job, but excited, cautiously optimistic.
Was there an option for you to maybe hold off a week, or you didn't even
explore? Oh, for sure. I didn't want to lose money for a week. If I hadn't moved, I would have taken time off, but the move was very expensive. Honestly, we weren't planning to move until pretty last minute, so I didn't really have much of an opportunity to make financial... I'm sitting here acting like I have a strict financial budget in place. I do not. But needless to say, I didn't quite... Because I didn't anticipate moving, I didn't have like a plan financially. And so then when we did decide to move, a lot of revenue went towards that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I don't think that now is really a good time for me to take time off. I also just kind of gave myself some time off while I was winding down for my current job. So I almost felt like this is sad, but I almost felt like I didn't deserve like time off because I was already kind of taking time off. So I guess all that to say, I'm not so burnt out that I felt the time off was warranted. I kind of just want to jump in and get over the hump. Not taking time off. That was a long-winded way of saying not taking time off officially, but kind of unofficially gave myself some time off, which was very nice. We're all moved in, almost all set up, just waiting on a couple pieces of home decor to come in. Need to take a little trip to Home Goods to get a couple of things. And yeah.
It's beautiful. All right, Kelsey. Today, I wanted to ask you some questions about religion. And if you want to ask me any questions, you certainly can. But I think you are the expert here.
I'm the expert.
You're the expert.
All right, jumping right into a heavy hitter topic.
So you grew up in a religious family. That's safe to say. Can you tell me about your first religious memory? Maybe when you realized that there's God.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a very vivid memory from when I was probably, I feel like I was 3, but that's so young. I might have been 4 or 5. Not that those are like drastically different than 3, but I was very young and I mean, I was born into a church, basically. I was baptized when I was a baby. My family is very religious, non-denominational Christian. I have a vivid memory of being between 3 and 5 and being on my swing in the backyard and my dad pushing me on the swing. And I think I had gone to Sunday school. We went to Sunday school every Sunday. And I had learned, you know, from the main tenets of the Bible that in order to go to heaven, you have to accept Jesus into your heart. And I told my dad, I want to go to heaven. Obviously, don't really want to go to hell. Sounds terrible. So I wanted to accept Jesus into my heart so that I could not go to hell. I mean, I think any self-respecting child would agree that that's probably the best course of action. And so I asked my dad to help me. And so my dad prayed with me, and that's when I accepted Jesus into my heart so that I wouldn't have to go to hell. I think that's my earliest memory of like a religious experience, if you could even call it that. Really, I just didn't want to go to hell,
mm-hmm.
which they who does? Who does want to go to hell? I mean, who's going to be like, yeah, you know what? If given the option, I choose to go straight to hell.
I mean, it sounds like they're having a party there.
Probably. But as you know, as a 3 or 4 or 5 year old, doesn't sound so fun. Maybe now it sounds more appealing. So yeah, that was that. And then from there, I mean, I was pretty involved in church until I went to college. Mm-hmm. My family, I mean, it was a non-negotiable. It was every Sunday, go to church. Then it's a whole day. It's a whole day thing, really. It's like, get up, get ready. Everyone has to look nice and put together, like church clothes, you know? Mm-hmm. Very old school. And then you go to church. And then there's a lot of socializing at the church. And my parents would always shoot the shit with other people at the church for literally what felt like an eternity. And my siblings,
you're a kid, I'm sure.
For my siblings and me, we would literally be like standing around waiting for my parents. When are they? Okay, you go get dad. You go get mom. We need to unite them. Because we would all be like wanting to go to lunch. Because that was that post-church ritual, is go out to a restaurant every time,
what
pretty much.
The restaurant?
All different restaurants.
All different ones?
But my favorite, which is no longer a thing, I was a big buffet connoisseur.
Who isn't?
I mean,
love a buffet.
Who doesn't? Like, one of the best things America has to offer, if you ask me. And there's this buffet called Fresh Choice, and I don't think they have this anymore. This is the best buffet. Hometown Buffet, I mean, I liked it as a kid because of all the desserts. Like, what kid doesn't like a buffet? There's desserts galore. Every dessert you could want. But Fresh Choice was actually, I mean, I haven't been there since I was a kid, so I can't really speak to the culinary status of it at this point. But from what I recall, it was pretty high quality shit.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely compared to a hometown buffet. It was fresh. It was tasty, and they had really good tapioca pudding. And I don't know about you, but I love tapioca pudding. Like, that
is tapioca what boba is made of?
Yeah, I think so.
And I could probably be all about it.
Oh, you've never had it?
No.
Oh my god, I should make some for us sometime. It's so
nice.
Good. I mean, you just make it out of a box.
Okay.
Well, maybe I could make it legitimately, but I've only had it from a box. Like, my mom and grandma would make it, but it's so good. It's just, I love pudding, and it's like, you've had rice pudding, right?
I think so, yeah.
It's kind of like that, but better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love this Fresh Choice place. That was always my election of where to go for lunch, but there were tons of restaurants. There's also this restaurant called Firestone Grill that when we go to SLO, we'll have to go because it's pretty much, it's probably SLO's most famous restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there forever. It's this huge kind of like sports grill, and they have really, really good tri-tip sandwiches, which you'll love. And really, I mean, all their steak is all, they have steak salads and all kinds of things like that. It's really good. What other restaurants are there? So Fresh Choice no longer exists. It hasn't existed for a long time. It got replaced with a CPK.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was other restaurants around there, mostly smaller restaurants. Like there's a place called Pizza Solo that's really good. They have these things called Solo Sticks, and it's basically just pizza crust with cheese on it, and then it's cut into strips. So it's basically like a deconstructed pizza. So it's pizza crust, a shitload of cheese, cut into strips, and then they give you ranch and marinara sauce, and you dip it in. Mm-hmm. It's really good. And then there was this other place called Mondeo, which that one went out of business too, but that was kind of more trendy kind of food, like wraps and stuff like that, which back in like the early 2000s, that was kind of a new thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would go to all different places, and yeah, it would be a whole day event. My favorite part was the food, of course. In my church, still the highlight of my life is eating food. This is our biggest passion in life, yeah, probably.
This is what we bond over.
Yeah, truly. Because I'll go out to eat with a lot of my friends and they just will eat a couple bites. You know,
we're not your real friends.
Not everyone loves to eat as much as us.
Today we went by, we wanted to get coffee, so we went to Vespaia, this restaurant in downtown, and they have a coffee shop that's adjacent to it. Fun fact. I opened Vespaia. I was on the opening crew. I was trying to get in there as a waitress, but they hired me as a bartender. So no wonder I got fired like 2 weeks later, because I'm no bartender. But they have, so it's obviously Italian, and at the coffee shop they have all kinds of desserts on the
case. I think that's like, what it's called. Yeah, display
like,
case
on display, and a lot of them like there's a refrigerator with different desserts, and you can tell they're just imported from Italy, and they're different like parfaits.
There were some sorbets that looked fancy. I've never seen such a thing.
Super fancy. I took a picture. I'm gonna show it to my other friend because this is literally all we talk about. Same with Kelsey, and yeah, we need to go back there when we haven't had a shit ton of Trader Joe's desserts already.
Yeah, we ate quite a feast and then drank. Well, I drank two beverages. Veronica's first beverage was so bad it went in the trash.
So was second, but I had to do it. This week I'm trying to keep away from caffeine. So I'm experimenting with all the with different decaf coffees from different places. And they just like, honestly, Starbucks has been the one that came through for me. I have actually a little bit of ignorant question. So non-denominational Christians, do they have any at all relation to Catholic Church?
That's not an ignorant question. So in the realm of identifying a specific doctrine of religion, that was probably phrased terribly, Christians and Catholics both believe the Bible. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of under, and I could be misrepresenting this, so apologies to any Catholics. It's my understanding that Catholicism is sector of Christianity.
Yeah,
because they believe the Bible.
Like growing up, well, I'm Orthodox Christian, and so are Russians, and so are like Greek people. Also, I know Georgian people, Armenian people too. I think, you know, a few other like nationalities and countries. I don't want to be like misrepresented, but growing up, it was Christianity split into Catholicism,
right,
and Orthodox Christianity. I just didn't know about anything else existing. So,
right.
But while you guys, you know, are crossing your heart from the left, we're crossing from the right. And that's like all I knew. But in America, I found out that there's different branches of church.
Right.
Of the church.
Yeah, it's very, I feel like here there's so many, and I'm sure other places, but there's so many different denominations, and we don't, so non-denominational Christian is basically not Catholic, not Lutheran, not Protestant, not Episcopalian. These are all branches of Christianity, but non-denominational is basically just we're not identifying with any of those. Mm-hmm. But if I had to pick what my church most aligned with out of those, mm-hmm, it would probably be Protestantism, because they're pretty, at this church, they take the Bible very literally, mm-hmm, which I feel aligns most with Protestantism. So from my perspective, and from my church's perspective, and from my family's perspective, Catholics were completely different from us. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at Christianity broadly, Catholics and Christians believe a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. But the Catholic practice of how they worship and how they observe their religion is very different from a non-denominational church or any more, I guess, classical Christian non-Catholic church, because the Catholics pray to Mary and believe she's a saint. Mm-hmm. And that there's none of that in Christianity.
You mean they pray to Mary over Jesus?
Not over Jesus, like, but
in addition to Jesus?
In addition
for
to.
For different reasons?
I don't know, actually. I mean, this would be speculative because mm-hmm. I wasn't raised Catholic, but from what I understand is they believe, Catholics believe Mary is a saint mm-hmm. and that she has, you know, like divine power. And so they pray to her, and Christians in the more Protestant version of Christianity, or just even non-Catholic Christianity, I'm identifying myself with it, but when I say we or me, I mean the brand of Christianity that I was raised in. Mm-hmm. These people don't believe Mary is a saint. They don't believe that she has any divine powers. They just think she's the person that gave birth to Jesus. She's just a regular mortal like mm-hmm. us. And then only Jesus and God are divine. There's no Mary worship. I don't know. It's not a Mary worship. It's more so just they pray to her. I don't know. Maybe they worship her. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to say whether they worship her or not, but we don't cross ourselves.
No. Wow.
That's a Catholic thing as far as I know. I think probably the one thing, or not the one thing, but the most quintessential practice that non-Catholic Christians share with Catholic Christians is that this is the sacrament. So taking the bread and the wine as the blood and the body of Christ, mm-hmm. taking communion, we would do that. And Catholics do that as well. And then the baptism, which is probably pretty common in religions like any Christian adjacent religion. Mm-hmm. Like I was baptized when I was 18 and I was baptized as a baby.
Yeah, we have a similar tradition when we're baptized when we're babies and, you know, godfather and godmother are mm-hmm. chosen for you. Do you have a godmother and godfather?
I don't.
Like, is it common or no?
I think from my experience, it's more of maybe like a cultural thing than a mm-hmm. religious thing. Like through the church, you would get a godmother and godfather?
Well, it's my mom's best friend.
Okay.
So I don't have a godfather, just godmother. Mm-hmm. And that's her. It was like the most logical person to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I have one. I would hope I would know. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I do. Okay. But I didn't. Yeah. I just know I got baptized. Well, it was more like a little sprinkle of water on my mm-hmm. head or whatever when I was a baby. And then when I was 18, I got like fully dunked. Yeah. That was an interesting experience. My church did it where you would, I forget, I might have had to have given like a speech or something. I had to go in front of the whole church and like profess my allegiance to God.
It was really too late for you.
I was about to go to college and question everything. We'll get a little foreshadowing. What was the question? I just went off on a tangent.
My question was how it compared to Catholicism.
Oh yeah. So yeah, very different. And interestingly enough, my grandfather, who's kind of the religious patriarch of my family, my dad's dad, he was raised Catholic mm-hmm. and he disliked Catholicism. And so he was raised Catholic. And then at 18, I want to say he became a born again Christian. Mm-hmm. So like a born again Christian is this is the word I've been meaning to say that's been on the tip of my tongue this whole time, an evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. is basically what my grandpa was. So this is someone who, you know, like Billy Graham, all the televangelist people, the preachers on the TV, like yelling and stuff. That's an evangelical Christian.
And they would come and knock on doors in Russia and like really? Try to push it on people who were just, everybody would just close the door.
Were they American?
No, they were just Russian people from evangelical church. And that's like people in Russia associated with like a cult.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, like in Russia, everybody's Orthodox Christian. Of course, there are, you know, Muslim republics in Russia, and that's different. But the majority is Orthodox Christian. Mm-hmm. So whatever, like anything else was considered a cult.
Yeah, well, evangelical, I mean, that's a whole other topic because that's a wild capitalist scheme, I would say, if you really want to categorize it as what it is. I should say that's my opinion. Yeah, my parents definitely like Billy Graham. I think he's deceased now. There's definitely a spectrum to how evangelical people are liable to be. And my church is not like one where the pastor... Hi, Odie. Where the pastor yells and like gets really animated, but it's also not... I wouldn't say it's a very modern church either. They take, like I said earlier, they take the Bible literally. There's not really room for interpretation there, which can lead to, I think, people maybe becoming a little put off, because I think what's important to keep in mind when you're interpreting a text that was written 2,000 plus years ago is this is a body of work that was compiled by a person, a human being, a mortal, a king, King James. And these are disparate texts that are slapped together into one book, and they're picking and choosing what to include. Like, mm-hmm. We don't have every text that was ever written about God and Jesus, because they probably got destroyed somewhere in Jerusalem or wherever they were written. I mean, I don't know. Now I'm sounding ignorant. Wherever all these texts were written, we don't have them all. They're from thousands of years ago. So you have to keep that in mind when you're interpreting the text, because it's missing pieces and it's been hand-selected by a king with an agenda. And I think that is just lost on a lot of Christians. And this church that I grew up in literally says in their mission statement, we take the Bible literally as the word of God. It doesn't get more explicit than that. You can't interpret. You can't pick and choose. It. What you see is what you get. And they're going to sell it to you just like that.
Are priests, pastors, are they dressed regular?
Yeah. So, that's another good point. So, whereas, you know, a Catholic priest is going to be celibate and wear the garb of a priest and kind of go dedicate their life to the priesthood and keep a very regimented lifestyle, take their vows and all that. A Christian pastor, they're typically married. They typically have kids. Mm-hmm. They dress like normal, you know, just slacks and mm-hmm. a bun down or whatever it might mm-hmm. be. Yeah, this church is also very, it's all run by men. And I think in today's world, that's becoming a little less common, I would say. Like the church that my sisters go to, they don't go to this church anymore that my family raised us in. My parents still go there. My grandma still goes there. My brother and his wife go there. But my two sisters go to a different church now. And there are women in positions of leadership there. From what my sisters have shared with me, it's a lot more progressive than the church that I was raised in.
Interesting. So how would you say religion manifests itself in your house? Did you have
the Lord's Prayer on the wall? So we have the Lord's Prayer in an embroidery piece on the wall. I don't know where that came from. We didn't have a picture of Jesus on the wall in our home, but interestingly enough, there is a nice picture of Jesus. Classic white Jesus, because Jesus was totally white. No, he wasn't. I said that facetiously. But, you know, the white people version of Jesus. We had that classic picture in my dad's office. It's definitely still there. Don't know where it came from. It's definitely been there longer than I've been alive. But in our house, we had, you know, crosses and stuff like this. We didn't have any like shrines or anything like that, but you could tell that it's a Christian house. But as far as how religion manifested, we prayed every night at dinner. We, like I said earlier, went to church every single Sunday. Mm-hmm. Rare, with very rare exceptions. We were never allowed to skip church unless we were out of town or we were sick. I rarely got out of going to church when I was a kid. You know, even if I'd have sleepovers, I would usually have to leave my sleepover with my friends to go to church. So it was kind of a treat if I could ever be allowed to get out of going to church. And then once I was older, like in junior high and high school, we had youth group as well. So I think that was on Thursday night. that was also kind of a non-negotiable. So I'd be going to church 2 days a week for years. Mm-hmm. And then there were the summer camps as well. And those were kind of intense. You go to this camp and you basically go into a deep dive of talking with everyone about your sins and all these things. And then they have all these rituals that you engage in, like burning your sins in a fire. And it's just, in hindsight,
there's not enough fire to burn ours.
There's not enough fires in the world.
No, we're not
that bad. Yeah, I mean, the camps were, some of them were kind of fun because it's, you know, you go to a lake and you get to kayak and do all these outdoor activities. And there were some that were kind of intense. There was this one that I went to where it was kind of the intense version of Christian camp. And they had all these challenges. So that's the one where you burn your sins in a fire. And then they made us do like a high ropes course, which I hate heights. Are you scared of heights?
Mm-hmm.
So that was not, I was really scared for that. They had you go with a friend and you would do all these challenges together where you'd have to like trust the other person and like you'd hold on to each other and walk these tight ropes and things mm-hmm. like that. And then there was, oh my God, this is super messed up now that I think about it. Okay, so there was this other activity at this camp. You're going to be like, what the hell are you people doing? There was this activity. So, you know, Christians, I mean, this is not shocking information. I think everyone knows this, but certain religious groups get persecuted in certain areas of the world for their beliefs, obviously. And at this camp, they wanted to instill in us basically that we could be persecuted for being Christian. So they would do this activity where the camp staff would pretend to be like hunting Christians, and we'd go out into the forest in the dark at night, and they would... This is like, I've buried this memory. So all this, the camp attendees would go out into the forest and we'd be like running from our persecutors. And, you know, it's all pretend, obviously, but it was kind of like kind of fucked up. I mean, I was in high school. Yeah, I wasn't like a 5-year-old, but this was a camp I willingly went to. Mm-hmm. Like my parents didn't force me to go. This one was the intense version. I chose to go to this one. Yeah, so we're out in the woods in the dark. I think we maybe, I don't even know if we have flashlights, and we're just running around trying to escape our persecutors. And then I think they, like, at the end, they, if you get caught, you get quote-unquote executed.
Mm-hmm.
This is the lengths that people go to indoctrinate their children.
This is interesting. Do you know about this activity of yours?
I haven't thought about that in a really long time, so this is a fun trip down memory lane.
Well, I'm happy to help unlock this memory. So Kelsey is growing up religious, you know, going to fun camps, doing fun activities. So when would you think you started having doubts about God existence, or maybe just about just doubts about the specifically what you have been taught about religion?
So I can't say exactly when I started having doubts, but probably as soon as I was mentally developed to question what people were telling me to believe, I started having doubts.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what age I was exactly, but definitely by junior high, because I remember struggling with the thought of this being the only, because Christianity, as I think most people, anyone who's familiar with it knows, it is touted as the only way to heaven. There is no alternate route. It's either you believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God or you go to hell. That concept was very hard for me to swallow once I started thinking intelligently, because I'm thinking, how, if this is the case, most religions think they're the right religion. That's what religion is. It's we're right and you guys are wrong. Maybe with the exception, and I'm not a theologian, so don't come for me. I mean, I think Buddhism is definitely kind of in its own realm, but I think any like Western religion is going to, there's one way to heaven, and if you don't believe this way, you're screwed. I think that was hard for me because I'm thinking, okay, well, what about other parts of the world where this isn't the primary, where Christianity isn't the primary religion. Like, all those people are just screwed. It's not fair, you know? Mm-hmm. I think I have this mindset of, that's not fair. Like, how can that be right? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like, people in Africa, they have different things to worry about, you know? Like,
yeah.
So if they're not even thinking about accepting Jesus, are they just doomed just because of a lack of information?
And geography, like, not everyone has the Bible. Like, the Bible is a very Western concept. I mean, obviously it didn't originate here necessarily. Well, I don't know. King James, wherever the hell, was he in England? I don't know. The King James Bible was written in English. So kind of narrows down the scope of who's going to have access to it, right? I mean, now the internet exists, but yeah, like you said, there's people in remote areas that have never heard of Jesus Christ in the Bible. And yeah, they're just going to go to hell. Like, that's ridiculous to me. So, and I think I even asked someone that question. I forget who, either someone in my family or a pastor. And I think their answer was something to the effect of, well, they'll probably have an opportunity to hear about it someday. Like, God would make sure that they would be exposed to it at some point. It's just like, no. It's just, it's not rational, you know? And it's hard for me to wrap my mind around to blindly accept something that does not make rational or logical sense. Anyway, going back to the question, I started doubting things. Basically, when I started thinking intelligently about the whole thing, I started doubting it because I'm finding holes, right?
And how old were you then?
If I had to guess, probably between 10 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I start asking questions, and I really want to understand it because almost everyone I care about believes this wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
My family believes it wholeheartedly. My extended family believes it wholeheartedly. Most of my friends were from church, you know? So everyone around me believes this unequivocally. And I start feeling like I'm the only person that does not believe it. And I want to believe it so bad. It was hard for me because I really wanted to just accept it and not question it, but I couldn't. And I think I spent years trying to identify with it in a real way. And I identified with it, not performatively. I don't want to say performatively, but like I was surrounded by people that believed it. All the activities I engaged in were church related. Like even my friends at school, we all went to the same church. Most of us went to my church. I had some friends that weren't from church and weren't Christian, but most of them were Christian. So it was like my entire circle. It was my entire kind of lifestyle, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was a very innocent. I was like very sheltered and very innocent. And so it's not like I was struggling with, oh, I'm like going to church every Sunday, but I'm like drinking on the weekends or like smoking weed. Or I was very straight edge in high school, like extremely mm-hmm. so. I never drank. I never did anything. I was very studious and nerdy, and I was involved in the church. That's just kind of how I had to be. And I didn't want to break the rules when I was in high school because I didn't know anything else. And I wanted my parents to let me go to college. If I had sidestepped in any way, they would have somehow not let me go.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wasn't really trying to do anything different at that point. Really, all I wanted to do was go to college and like find my own life and figure things out on my own. I didn't know what that meant, but I felt these doubts building and building, and they just got worse over time. And whenever I asked people, authority figures, for answers, I would never get a satisfactory answer.
Mm-hmm.
It would just go in a loop. The conversation would always go in a circle. It's a situation of, you have a doubt, just pray about it. Ask God to take your doubt away. And it's like, that is so cyclical. You know, that's not answering the question. Like, what does that solve? Also, if there is a God, I don't think... Okay, so here's my rationale for why I can't get behind a religion. If there's a God and he created us and he gave us the ability to think intelligently and question what we're told and question our reality, why would he then punish us for doubting something that we have to like literally hinge our entire life upon? Choosing a religion, choosing to follow a religion is a life-altering decision. It will impact every area of your life. It will impact who you surround yourself with, the decisions you make, whether you choose or choose not to do certain things, what your priorities are, what you're morally okay with and what you're morally against. Like, this pervades every aspect of your life. It's not a frivolous decision. So I don't see how a fair God could punish someone for thinking intelligently about something like this. Mm-hmm. And I think I was surrounded by people who just told me, basically, pray it away. Anytime there's a problem, just pray it away. Ask God to take it away. And it's like to me, that's not how life works. There should be growth involved. You know, it should be a learning experience, not just basically to me, having someone tell you pray it away is like, just, it's telling you to willfully go into denial and just pretend like something isn't happening when it is. And that just did not sit right with me. Mm-hmm. Because I think we have to take ownership of our growth. And if we're deciding whether or not to believe something, I think we have an obligation to ourselves and to others to vet whatever it is we may or may not believe and see if it stands up to logical tests, rationality tests, and is this conducive to the betterment of our lives, our character development, and the lives of people around us. If you're just not questioning anything and you're just unequivocally believing everything that's fed to you, I don't know. To me, that's kind of a cop-out.
So now you started to have doubts, and I'm guessing your overall devotion to religion since the age of 10, 12, did it like subside gradually?
I was trying to jam myself into a round hole as a square peg, as they say. I think
you still went to the camp, you know, you were still clearly indoctrinated.
I was trying really hard, and I was hoping at some point it would just click and I would be all in. And I had some experiences that did feel like spiritual experiences. I went on a missions trip to Mexico with my church, and we would go. I think I went on this a few years.
Without your parents?
Yeah. This is a summer thing that you do in high mm-hmm. school. And you go, this is actually the coolest thing I ever did in a church.
Sounds sick.
It's really sick. So
we're in Mexico.
We'd take a school bus to Tijuana mm-hmm. and cross the border, obviously. And we would camp out in this field in the middle of nowhere in tents.
And sounds like Coachella.
Mexicella. Missing a lot of prime Coachella elements, but the camping part is there. So we'd stay out of this camp. We would have someone from our church cook us meals. It was always Mexican food, chef's kiss, like authentic Mexican food. Then during the day, we would go to these sites and get to know these families and build. Sometimes we'd build churches for them, and sometimes we would build homes for them. And it was really, really, really cool. And we're out there mixing concrete. Like, we would build an entire house from the ground up in like a week. It was really cool. I did that a few times. And then at night we would kind of do, you know, our spiritual worship things back at our campsite. I don't remember the details of this, but I did have a kind of spiritual experience at one of these things. In hindsight, I think, and subsequent to that experience, I think I rationalize it. It's very easy to get caught up emotionally when you're out in this remote setting. You're with people that all believe this book, and we're all out there on this mission, which is tangibly helping people. So that's very good. Like, I think that's what anyone who's involved in a church should be contributing to society in that way, because that's basically what the Bible is all about, you know, is helping those less fortunate than you. And I think that actually carrying that out was very fulfilling. I think I can chalk up, though, that spiritual experience to just kind of getting lost in the sauce of being in that environment and being around people and being very kind of focused on a goal. And look, I'm not saying this to, I don't want to disparage religion. I know it probably sounds like I'm disparaging it a lot, but all I can do is speak from my experience, and I can rationalize away pretty much any spiritual experience that I had in a church setting. Since I left the church, I've had spiritual experiences outside of a religious environment. I believe in a spiritual realm. Like, I'm not saying I'm an atheist or anything like that. I just think that for me, textbook religion didn't work. And when I really felt free to own my decision to not identify with a church anymore was when I went to college. Because like I said earlier, I was in high school and junior high and younger, I was surrounded by people that all believed this one thing. I didn't have access to really any other community. And I was also in a small town with all white people. It was a very limited environment, generally speaking. And then I'm in this church environment that's even, it's a bubble inside of a bubble. So going to college, I mean, I obviously met people from totally different backgrounds, people who are atheists, people who just believe whatever else religion. I met a bunch of other people who were also identified as Christian, but not in the same kind of narrow way that I was raised. It was more progressive, more open-minded. And I was just, I felt comfortable to question things even more because I wasn't like in this environment that was, I don't want to say it was hostile towards questions and doubts, but it was not really welcoming. And like I said, it was just, it was always a circular reasoning. If you have a doubt, just pray it away. And it's like, that's not getting me anywhere. How am I supposed to grow? How am I supposed to challenge myself? You know? Mm-hmm. So getting into the college environment, I continued to try to identify as it was really hard for me to like fully break away because this is all I was surrounded by. And I felt like there was something wrong with me because I couldn't get myself to really believe it. Like I was acting it out, but I didn't feel it inside, you know? And going to college, I kept trying. I went to college with a friend who was also Christian. We were roommates and my first year in the dorms. And so we went to some college, you know, Christian groups and things like that. And I kept trying and it's still, at this point, I'm getting even farther away because it's no longer my family kind of, I don't want to say they're forcing me to go to church, but they kind of were. Now it's, I have ownership of whether or not I go. And I was trying to get myself to go. I was trying to be involved because I was kind of like, I think a lot of it was, I didn't want to let my family down because they of course wanted me to be involved in the on-campus Christian groups. And my heart was not in it. And it very shortly, I fully just stopped. And then I ended up having to basically, I didn't have to come out to my parents about it, but I had a frank conversation with my parents about how I no longer identified with their religion. I felt I owed it to them to say that. I probably could have kept it to myself. But
it's something that's hard to keep to yourself, especially because this is like the core of your relationship with your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't feel that I could have an authentic relationship with mm-hmm. them if I hid this information from them.
How did they react to it?
Not really well. They were disappointed. They were upset. All for good reason. I mean, in their mind, if I don't believe, if I break away from this and denounce it, quote unquote, like I'm going to hell in their eyes. So it's hard, you know, I knew that that's how they would see it because how else are they going to see it? It's pretty black and white to them in the context of interpreting the Bible. It's like, yeah, you're in or you're out, you know? And so it was hard. It was hard. And our relationship had a lot of strain on it for mm-hmm. a while because once that information was out there, I acted accordingly. I mean, they knew I wasn't going to church anymore. They knew I was engaging in activities that weren't aligned with their beliefs. And it was,
they do bring
it was hard.
You closer to God, you know?
Yeah.
They're the ones that bring you the spiritual experiences, but whatever.
No, absolutely.
We're talking about sewing.
Sewing and playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
I mean, but ultimately, you know, while those conversations were really hard, I'm very glad that we had them because I would say my parents and I now have grown a lot and I feel that they respect me as a person and I respect them. And we try to not have certain conversations that might go down a contentious path. But ultimately, I think had I not had that conversation with my parents, it would have stunted our growth as parents and child, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think it would have done anyone any favors for me to have like pretended for years, you know, because it would have come out eventually. And so I'm glad I had that conversation with them, but it was tough at the time. And I also thought that maybe by having this conversation, I will pave a path of rebellion for my three younger siblings after me. I really just did it for myself ultimately, because my three younger siblings are all Christian. But, you know, we all respect each other. We all love each other. And I'm the black sheep because I'm no longer a Christian, but it's all love with us. And even though my family probably thinks I'm going to hell, they love me, and maybe they can get me in the back door of heaven.
So with all that said, with your transition from being very religious as a kid and then having doubts, and then now breaking it down to your parents that you don't consider yourself that religious, are there still any leftover religious traditions that you follow? That can be stuff that you do with your parents, or it can be just between you and God.
The holidays are, I mean, my parents observe every Christian holiday. Mm-hmm. They observe Easter. They observe Christmas. Obviously, whenever I'm home for Christmas, we go to church on Christmas Eve. My mom usually makes us read the Christmas story from the Bible on Christmas morning, which is cute.
It's cute. It's just your guys' tradition.
Yeah, it's our little tradition. I think most of my religious exposure now is when I'm with my family.
Mm-hmm. When life gets hard and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for hope, do you talk to God? Do you pray?
Yeah, I think I'm probably a very opportunistic prayer.
Me too.
Like, if things are really bad, I'll be like, please, God, don't let X, Y, and Z happen. Or please, God, let X, Y, and Z happen when I really want something. That's, you know, very opportunistic. I don't know. This is something that I think I spent so many years, I don't want to say demonizing religion, but being kind of turned off by religion because of my experiences with this one church, that I was pretty shut off to it. And I don't think I will ever return to a Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
In this context, I'm not like I'll never step foot in one, but like I don't think I'll ever return to one as a practicing Christian. But I think now I'm at a point in my life where I do want to continue to develop spiritually. And I just don't think that the church/indoctrinated religious setting works for me. But I believe in God, whatever. I believe in a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have. I've never been atheist or anything. I've always believed in something, you know? Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, definitely an opportunistic prayer. But I don't really, other than that, I'm trying to think if I observe anything else, like, instinctually that I don't think about.
Is Luke religious?
No.
No. Like, was he raised as anything?
I think he went to a Christian preschool and maybe went to church a little bit when he was younger, but not nearly. I think it was pretty casual.
Got it.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but I think I consider myself agnostic. I think he's less agnostic if it's on a scale. I think he believes less that there's something. I'm pretty convinced there's something bigger than us. I think he's more, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I believe that there's it probably an afterlife. I don't know. I don't,
yeah,
like, this is something
October
I need.
October 15th in LA. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. When I'm looking at this, you know, golden hour, and which is about to go to sunset, behind you, Kelsey, in your new apartment, I definitely believe in God.
Yeah. I mean, how could you not? It's too pretty. It's too pretty not to.
But yeah, God is in like a broader sense. There's definitely something, I think. I just don't think it's limited to this one particular person.
Exactly. And I think I really want to, at some point, explore more extreme experiences mm-hmm. of delving into the spiritual realm. Would you ever try ayahuasca?
I'm terrified by it. I had experiences when I would eat an edible and I would be weird the whole day. But can you imagine being weird for a few days? Like I ate an edible and we were at Huntington Gardens. I felt weird. You kept telling me I wasn't weird, but I felt weird. I thought of like my brain.
Well, you weren't acting weird, but you might have felt weird.
I thought my brain was done for. Ayahuasca sounds like there's good stuff on the other side of it, but in a moment, you know, like
throwing up horrible. And everything.
Yeah, and like
shitting yourself.
being with people who you don't know.
Yeah, that sounds kind of scary. Yeah.
Is he going to really take good care of me?
It sounds
terrifying.
Plus, sounds super terrifying.
I listened to a podcast, I think it was Chris Williamson, where they were talking about it, or maybe it was Tim Ferriss, where they were talking about, remember, I think it was the same one
as
with Hoffman Institute,
yeah,
where they were saying about how some people like don't get normal after ayahuasca for like days and days,
or some people never go back to normal.
Like,
so
how do you function? How do you do?
It's very scary. Activities? Well, that's what's so scary about it is it can. I've listened to a lot of podcasts of people who've done it, and I've also read like on Reddit. There's a whole ayahuasca subreddit. And it's very scary because it can go either way. Like, it can permanently fuck you up for the rest of your life where you can never assimilate normally back into life. Or you can have a profound experience and then somehow assimilate back into life, but like take the lessons that you learned into your normal day-to-day life. But all that to say, it's super scary, but I have to try it. Mm-hmm. I have to at some point. I'm not ready now to try it. I think I like experiencing altered states of consciousness. And I think that is one that I just have to know. Like, I have to see what it's like. Because it sounds so, like, such a wild and reality-shaking experience. But it's scary. I mean, everyone also says, when you go to a legit center, so I've done research on the centers.
Like in LA?
No, I would not do one. There's the most legitimate one is this one. God, what is the guy's name? He's Terrence McKenna's brother.
Who's Terrence McKenna?
He's this guy who wrote this book called The Food of the Gods. And he did extensive research on psychedelic plants and basically the entire theory of how ancient people figured out how to eat or drink or otherwise consume psychedelics, and basically like how humans evolved to have psychedelic experiences, both in the religious context and in like any context. So like recreationally, even animals sometimes engage in like eating psychedelic plants, whatever it might be. So he had some very controversial but groundbreaking theories about this. And he unfortunately died of brain cancer or something like this. And his brother and him were very close, and they went on all these psychedelic pilgrimages in different parts of the world and met different shamans and basically were researching, you know, psychedelic religions and practices in different areas of the world for years. Like, this was their life's work. So I forget the brother's name, but he founded this institute. I believe it's called, let me see if I can find it, Solara or something. No, that's not it. It's something with an S, I want to say. His name's Dennis McKenna. That's the brother's name. It's now becoming very kind of in vogue to try ayahuasca. I mean, you can get it easily. Basically, when I eventually try it, which will be someday at some point, I want to go to one of these centers because apparently it's like the best cultural environment. They have one in Peru. They have one in Costa Rica. I think they have some. They have them in different places. And you're going to a shaman or practitioner or whatever who is familiar with like the cultural practice. And it's not just some like Instagram influencer saying they're a shaman. Like, it's more of a legitimate process, and it's it's super expensive, and it's supposedly the most safe environment to do it in because they do a pre-screening to make sure you're mentally stable enough to do it. They do like a whole medical profile on you to see what medications you've taken. If you have like any mental illnesses, they could like disqualify you from doing it if they think you're not mentally stable enough. So it's good. It's attractive to me because they're not just letting anyone do it for shits and giggles, because I think it's become very adopted by like white people. I feel like, oh yeah, let's take ayahuasca. To experience a ritual like this, you're adopting another culture's practice. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't our practice. And I think a lot of people, I mean, including myself, it's like a tourist attraction, you know, but it's supposed to be to experience it in a way that I think is as genuine as it could possibly be without literally being a part of that culture. I think the best way to go about it would be to go to a place where this is, where maybe the practice originated and where there's still ties to a particular culture and practice, even the location of this is where these rituals originated. Or anyway, I don't know if that made any sense, but
that makes sense.
I want to go to one of these centers. They also help you assimilate back into life. So it's a long process. You have to go on a special diet beforehand, because if you eat the wrong things before, you can like shit yourself and throw up everywhere. And that would obviously make the experience like more unpleasant than it would be otherwise. So they give you a diet that you're supposed to go on. And if you're on any medications, you're supposed to like not take so that it doesn't interact. So it just seems like they put thought and hopefully it seems like they put some scientific application into the prep. And then the post, you do therapy sessions and things like that. So you're not just like, I mean, I'm sure people still go crazy even in this controlled environment, but I think the goal is don't let people in who are going to go batshit crazy after.
Like, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think it'd be cool. I don't know if I can get anyone to go with me, because
depends when you ask. I don't know. Maybe in a few years, but it's like, I don't know if I'm going to be more open to it.
I don't think Luke would do it with me either. I asked him and he goes, I mean, it sounds interesting, but also why would I do that? Because if you can be changed irrevocably from it in a potentially negative way, it's a pretty big risk to take.
Yeah, I don't want to lose my mind.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know, Kelsey. You need new friends.
Who'll do it with me?
Yeah. It's crazy. What I was thinking while we were having this conversation, I was thinking the whole time how freely we talk about it here in America. Like, back home, just FYI, this conversation to be recorded on a podcast is just impossible. And something has to do with the fact that all these things, all these experiences, even weed, you know, like I had great insights just being high. I had to like write them down, and then next day I would read them and I would be like, oh wow, that's profound.
Yeah, like where did that come from? Like,
in Russia, they try to keep everybody in order.
Totally.
Weed is as hard of a drug as, I don't know, I don't want to lie, but it's a pretty illegal substance.
Yeah.
People go to jail for just possessing weed.
Yeah.
Marijuana. It says a lot about the culture that they're just scared of people to like be thinking outside the box.
Totally.
Like, we talked about it before, but it's just preferable for them if you grow up like everyone else, while everybody in America, okay, I can't speak for all America, but like in LA, people embrace their weirdness. Like, I just recently started embracing the fact that I'm a little different than everybody else. Do you think you're weird?
Yeah, I think we both kind of march to the beat of our own drums in a sense. I think we...
But that's how you attract
totally
people that are similar to you. They see you for who you are.
Yeah.
I just like recently discovered it.
I feel like you've always been authentically yourself.
Well, you know, I used to spell
at least as long as I've known you.
Used to spell my name with a C.
So when I met Veronica, I said, do you spell it with a K or a C? And she said, either way. So I wrote it in my phone with a C. And then recently it came up between us. And I was like, wait, I forget how exactly it came up. But she said something like, oh, I prefer it with a K. And I was like, oh my God, why didn't you tell me? So I went into my phone and changed it to K. I mean, it's more Russian with a K.
Yeah, the guy, obviously. The guy who valeted my car today, he asked me how to spell my name, like with a C or with a K. I feel like most people would just buy.
I wonder if he's Russian.
No.
Maybe he knows some Russian ladies.
Maybe. All right. It's been lovely. I found out a lot about you. It was an interesting conversation. I hope it's interesting to our listeners too.
Yeah. So at some point, we're going to get a Kelsey's ayahuasca journey. It might be in 20 years, but.
Please stay tuned.
Do you have any other insights about your exposure or lack thereof to religion?
I grew up, like I said, Orthodox Christian, and we have pretty similar holidays to you, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You guys follow, I think, the same calendar as Catholics, so your Easter is already
over
for, yeah, for a few weeks. Ours is tomorrow, and we have our own traditions in terms of like what we do for Easter. We dye eggs. We don't like hide them from kids anywhere. I don't know whatever you guys do.
Easter egg hunt?
Huh?
No Easter egg hunt?
We don't do that. So
people, I don't know where that shit came from. That's not from anything in the Bible. I don't know where that came from. It's fun though.
People go to a cemetery and they like chill at the.
Whoa, that's kind of cool. At the gravestone?
At the gravestones of their relatives.
Uh-huh.
People like chill there. People have a little drink.
You have a little picnic?
Yeah, like kind of like a picnic. Picnic, but there are benches sometimes.
Okay.
At like the grave.
Right.
At like the spot. People usually leave behind a few candies because like a lot of people would just, kids or teenagers, they would come and like pick them up.
Yeah.
It's just a tradition. But I think like mid-childhood, my mom found out that actually during Easter, we used to think that we're visiting the spirit of the dead relative.
Right.
But it's actually, they actually are at home waiting for us.
Oh.
So it's better. It's like, you shouldn't be going to
so they're not there.
The cemetery.
They're not the
there.
Cemetery.
They're like at the at your
they're
house.
Like, where's my eggs?
So then we found out that you actually have to go to the cemetery. Oh, that's when my mom went to clean up the cemetery last week. Yeah, like you have to go the week prior. So that, and the Christmas is not on the 24th. It's actually on the 6th of January. And it's not as vastly celebrated as it is in America.
Well, yeah, it's like a capitalist money festival here.
Yes. We the way you guys celebrate Christmas, we celebrate New Year's.
Okay.
It's like very, it's like a big, big holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And we like drink for the next 10 days.
That sounds
so
fun.
So growing up, I would say not extremely religious, but my mom had me learn Our Father, like the Russian equivalent of it. And to this day, when, you know, stuff gets hard, especially like when I need to pray for my mom, I would pray, I would read this to myself and like ask God.
Is it the Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, like, that one? Like, or is it?
In Russian.
But is it that same Bible verse?
Yes.
Or is that even a Bible? No, that's not a Bible verse. It's just a prayer. I think. Are you celebrating tomorrow?
Well, I'm going to a friend's house, but it's more like a Cinco de Mayo. So maybe we should go and buy pastas and bring it to the house. So pasta is a cake that it's like pretty dry and has raisins inside, and it has the icing on top and sprinkles, and it's just such a taste of childhood. And of course, as a child, you just want to eat the top. And you would do it and get yelled at by.
Would you put
adults.
The bottom part back on the plate?
Yeah.
For and, some and other lucky
what,
guy.
You know what sucks? You're not supposed to throw it away because it's
is
like
it bad luck. Or
not
something?
Bad luck, but it's like disrespectful to religion, to God. You're not supposed to throw it away. So now you have to eat the stale stuff like a week later.
That's unfortunate.
Like in Russia, we have this, I guess it's like, goes back to the times where there were like post-war times or like war times where there was like shortage of food,
right?
And bread, you're not supposed to throw away bread
ever.
So, like, only when it gets super stale,
yeah,
when there's like mold, you throw it away. But it's just better if you eat it and not waste it. It's,
you won't get yelled at by your mom.
From the phone. Yeah. So to sum up, there's a beautiful cathedral in the town where I'm from. I think it's like pretty famous in Europe. I can show you the picture later. It's pretty. If again shit hits the fan, I would go to Russian Orthodox Church here in LA. However, after the war started, I got like a strange feeling towards Russian church, like Orthodox Church in general,
yeah,
because there's like support the war with Ukraine. So there was a time I actually went to Ukrainian church. Ukraine, like the Western Ukraine, are Catholics, actually. And, okay. Like, Eastern Ukraine, I think they're just Orthodox Christians. But anyway, I don't really care. There is no difference for me. Yeah, this is all the stuff that I follow. Similarly to you, I believe in one God and, you know, some sort of force existing. And I think there are certain religious, spiritual experiences that you can be closer to it. I just remember feeling spiritual during 2020 when I didn't work for a while. And I had a lot of time to myself and I like smoked weed more than any other time in my life. And I felt
connected.
I felt connected.
Yeah.
I felt really, really good. It's a really nice feeling when your mind is not cluttered. You can see some things more clearly. When your mind is not cluttered with like everyday tasks with, you know, calls, deadlines, Excel spreadsheets.
The very like one-dimensional, or is it three-dimensional? Whatever this plane of existence forces us to do. The matrix. It's nice to break out of it and see that there's more out there. But it's scary. It is scary. Like, it's scary to think about. We're in this society. I'm going to sound like I'm high. I'm not. Yet, but we're in the society where we're literally just born to be basically cogs in the machine, and it's so not what we're destined and created to do, I feel like, and we're forced into it, and our goal is to break out of it.
We're not forced, but at the same time,
that's a victim mentality.
If we choose the other way, where, you know, you just work a job that's doesn't really take you anywhere, but it keeps your mind sane. You're choosing the path of like peaceful life, but at the same time, there's not a lot of experience you can afford. I know somebody who I was friends with, and we kind of on one hand judge her. So she's been here for years and years, and she's also from Russia. And she, yes, my man's.
Hi, Odie.
She doesn't seem to have a lot of goals in terms of personal development. She works at restaurants, works at restaurants here, works at restaurants in New York. And I'm saying that because she, you know, like all her, the whole time I knew her, she was just been pretty much on the same place, doing the same things. Mm-hmm. However, I think, and we think with my friend group, she might have just cracked the code because she is really happy. She seems like a very happy person with what she has. And what she does is she works. She goes home. She doesn't have to worry about her job, you know, not done right. Like other responsibility, like her responsibilities other than what she just did today before she closed out the shift. And then on her days off, she goes to the beach when it's warm. And when it's not, I don't know, she goes for walks. She just sounds like a happy person. I just don't know. You know, it's kind of like Ozempic. I don't know what it's going to be like in 20 years.
Yeah.
When this work and, you know,
the side effects that you're not aware of until later down the line.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, but the alternative.
She might have cracked the
code. Yeah. And maybe she could just pivot into something else that allows her same freedom, but maybe isn't constrained to going to a restaurant every day.
Maybe she doesn't mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
I maxed out my restaurant abilities, my restaurant business, a lot of time because I just couldn't handle people's bullshit anymore. But she just seems like somebody who likes people, friendly, doesn't mind helping them out.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I envy her a little bit. I like we were saying earlier, off record, sometimes I see people in restaurants working and I go, damn, those were simpler times when this was my job. I could leave, not think about it till the next shift.
Not only leave, you also leave and probably get lit somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Just blasted 5 minutes later or sometimes even during the shift. Wasn't not me, just other people I knew. Just kidding. I did it sometimes. I did it a couple times. But I don't know. I also wonder if what I'm doing now is sustainable.
But again, we'll see in 20 years. Imagine she's like the happiest person of all of us.
I also think that more broadly, I think I'm always setting... That's a nice stretch, Odie. I don't want to say I'm always kind of moving the goalpost for myself. It's always, okay, once I get to X, I'll be happy. I get there. I still don't feel fulfilled. Don't get me wrong. I'm a lot I'm happier now than I've ever been. A lot of things have gone right in my life. I'm very fortunate that things have aligned in the way that they have. But I still feel below it all a sense of dissatisfaction and that I'm still not where I want to be. There's something missing.
We spoke about, again, off record, we spoke about Skinny Confidential and Lauren and Michael. And I remember the phrase that Michael said, or she said about him, that he's always blissfully dissatisfied. So it's a good thing.
What does that mean?
That means that you are content with stuff that is in your life. But again, you know that there's something, that there's a next level. You just can't be content. You don't allow yourself to be content completely because you're going to become complacent.
Okay.
And that's not a bad way to be.
So you're not
fully dissatisfied.
So you're happy, but you're not complacent, right?
Yeah. Okay. You just know that there's something else. Like, I need to push for something more. And I see,
I like that.
I watched a video a few years ago of this girl. She was just dropping gems, like her wisdoms that she learned in like 30 years of her life. And I have never played Mario Kart, but she, I guess this is what I'm about to say, is from Mario, and correct me if I'm wrong.
I've played it like once, so I probably have no authority on Mario Kart, but I can.
She said princess is always in the next castle, or princess is always in the other castle.
Oh, okay. Is like that like the grass is always greener?
No. Once you reach, this is exactly what you said, once you reach a certain
threshold. Yeah.
You think that this is it and you're about to be happy. But no, you can only ride this wave for a little bit.
Yeah.
The princess is in the other castle.
Yep.
Like, it's,
damn, you, that's profound.
there's going to be another milestone to reach.
Mm-hmm. Apparently the solution to this, what I understand is the solution to this on paper, but I have not learned how to put it into practice yet, is practice mindfulness and live in the present moment, and you will never feel the sense of dissatisfaction because you won't be living for the future or the past. You'll just be blissful in the present moment. The next goal that I have is to become so aware of the present moment that I'm not thinking about. I think I don't focus so much on the past. So they say depression comes from focusing on the past and anxiety comes from focusing on the future. Mm-hmm. I definitely fall into the latter category. My fears and concerns all ride on me worrying about the future and getting to the next place. And will I be making enough money to do this when I'm this age? Will I be successful enough to give my family money at this age? Am I far along enough in my life as I should be at this age? All that shit. Am I doing enough? What can I do?
It's all better than not having those thoughts. Do you understand?
No, of course it is.
This girl doesn't have any of these thoughts.
Yeah, but I think my concern with it lies in what am I doing about it?
You're doing something.
I'm doing something, but I always think there's something I'm missing. There's always something, you know, I'm not in my final form, you know?
We're never in our final form. That's the beauty of it.
That's true. I need to focus on the present.
I talk to you. I also am saying these things about to myself.
Yeah.
Because
we do
I'm the same. I'm experiencing the same crisis as you.
Yeah.
So
I think
I can only ride like my next achievement for so long. And then there needs to be another chase.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it hurts, man. It fucking hurts. Like, we were talking about this when I was looking for a job, and it was stressful, but it was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I got the job, now I'm like, damn, okay, what do I do now? You know, and it's weird because it was so stressful and like annoying looking for a job, and it sucks. But now I'm like, what's the next milestone?
You know, what's a good thing that, you know, what's a good practice that came from Alex Hormozy, actually? You know him, right? He's on a bunch of podcasts. Alex and Layla Hormozy.
I don't know.
They're an entrepreneurs, but they like create a lot of content now. Him and her have podcasts each.
Oh, I've heard of him. Yeah.
So he has this thing of like how to feel instant gratitude. You need to imagine that if you were 70-year-old version of yourself,
mm-hmm.
you would literally give everything you have, even if you are the wealthiest person in the world, you would give everything you have to be 32.
Yeah.
And like not have any of this.
Isn't yeah.
this beautiful? Like imagine you're 70 years old right now and you have everything you ever wanted, but you like barely have any health.
Yeah.
And you're like, I would give anything to just be able to like go for a walk and to have, you know,
no pain
in my body.
Damn.
But like I would give all my
That's
money.
Humbling.
And I'm 100% sure this is how a person feels.
Yeah.
So even when you have everything you want to have when you're 50, like all the career achievements, you would still exchange everything you have for being 32 years old and not having any of that, because there's chase, there's limitless energy that you have.
Yeah,
there's so many more years to come for you when you're 32 as opposed to when you're 50, 60,
that's
70.
True. Yeah, I've heard some variation of that. Imagine you're 80 years old and you go back to this exact moment in the present and like look at yourself. Basically what you just said. I have heard that, and that, thank you for reminding me, because that is a very humbling view, because it's true. We'll always be chasing something, but there's so much to be happy about now. Like look at Odie watching the sunset.
I'm watching the sunset myself. I'm about to cry. You look so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. And this guy, he looks out the window every night at the sunset, and it's very so adorable cute. And he's definitely a reincarnation of some like shaman or something. The dude has a spirit. He has a spiritual energy. This cat, look at him. He's sniffing the flowers. Odie, you're so cute. All right. Well, that was a lovely conversation.
I agree. We'll see you guys soon with some more gems.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.